After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Welcome to the Sharon Salzberg Meta Hour. This podcast is a reflection of our connected lives and is dependent on the generosity of you, our listener. So please go to mindpodnetwork.com/Sharon and either use the donate button or bookmark the Amazon portal through which we will receive a percentage of whatever you purchase from Amazon, or sign up for a free trial with audible.com. We thank you for your support in allowing Sharon to continue to share her exquisite heart wisdom. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sharon Salzberg and her Meta Hour. I'm here with Sharon. This is like a field recording, Sharon. Okay. In other words, we go around the world. Well, that's what I'd love to do, actually. Go around the world and just talk to different people. Wouldn't that be fun?
Sure. Barcelona next November.
Yeah. Okay. So we're here and in New York. And so happens that I have a very good friend, and he's in New York. And I said, his name is Jared Levy. Hi, Jared.
Hi there.
And I said, why don't you come along with me? Because I'm going to do a podcast with Sharon. And we have been, as everybody knows out there, this is part of the MindPod Network. And with our wonderful family that's been called Low-Hanging Fruit Friends, which is, yes, we got somebody on Mind Rolling, we got somebody saying to us, you know, you do all this stuff with all of your buddies from the old days. It's kind of low-hanging fruit, isn't it? And we go, yeah, but what low-hanging fruit? It's pretty great. So Sharon, of course, and Krishna Das and Ram Das and Jack Kornfield, who is very close to Sharon. And so it's a wonderful network. And I must remind everybody to please do the way it's listener-supported. And the way that we can continue this and keep doing the kinds of things that we're doing is for you to go up onto, in this case, go to Sharon's page on mindpodnetwork.com, and you either can support through the Amazon portal. Do you know this, Sharon?
No.
People go and they take the Amazon link that's on all of the different podcasters' page, or even just MindPod itself. And they can bookmark that link. And whenever they go in and everybody buys something from Amazon, almost every week, I would say, Amazon sells everything. And so we, meaning you and the MindPod Network, get a little tiny percentage. But if enough people do it, it's a way that we can get supported. So we encourage you to do that or just make a donation. Soon we're going to have t-shirts.
You are?
Yeah.
Saying MindPod? Or Mind Rolling?
It's going to have MindPod, Mind Rolling, and we're going to, I forget which one we're doing. We're doing a couple that'll feature your book covers. That I'm sure somebody's talking to your peeps about that, by the way. But we're going to have these wonderful t-shirts, yeah, from everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a whole new thing that we're thinking of. So other ways for you to support us. So we thank you for that support. So Jared represents and part of our whole mission here, and why everybody we originally got everybody interested, was because we really wanted to make available these decades of experience of these teachers to a new generation, the new generation, which is loosely called millennials. And Jared here represents, he's a, you could be the,
I'm on the upper edge of that millennial crust, but yeah, I'm still in there.
You're in there.
What's the upper edge?
I think it's supposed to go to about 33, 34 right now. Yeah. 33.
Yeah, so you're right on the cusp. And so I said, why don't you come along and see what you can talk to Sharon about, and she can give a little bit of feedback that would be useful, not just for you, but for a whole generation that you can represent at this moment. So go ahead. Ask something. Talk to her.
Ask something. Okay. Well, it's interesting. So we just put on this conference about purpose this past weekend. Some of the academics and researchers were talking about millennials being a generation that is, they think is going to move us towards more purpose, they're going to push businesses to be better, to have more impact. And I was wondering, you know, with your, you know, obviously practices growing, and I hear from a lot of my friends, oh, Sharon Salzberg, I'm getting into meditation, or they're taking the challenge, you know, kind of what you would tell that generation as they're starting to embark on their journey, you know, around purpose and mindfulness and things like that.
Well, you know, I kind of hear the same thing, I think, about millennials. And I always think back to, well, you know, I don't know how old Raghu was when he went to India. I'm sure not in his dotage. You know, I was 18 when I went to India. How old were you?
You were a little guy. I was 6 years older than you when I went to India, 24. Yeah.
Yeah, so we were pretty young, and I think a lot about that time and this time, just pondering, you know, not with any answers, but really pondering, because I think, you know, the new perspectives and that, not just the sense of meaning, but methods to actualize it, you know, so it wasn't just like a dream or something idealistic, so that you felt every day your life was in harmony with that aspiration or that determination. We had to go all the way to India. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't, there were no podcasts, you know, or like, you know, it just wasn't there. And so by the time you got there, you had done a lot of work. You needed powerful intentionality and willingness to break free and, you know, just have this outrageous adventure. And I think we pretty well, not maybe everybody, but most people went overland, you know, through Afghanistan, you know, countries like that. Mm. It's kind of outrageous. And when I went to India, I'd never even been to California, you know, so I think about people now with maybe some of that same fire for understanding and not theoretical understanding, but making it real in their lives. And there's so much more around. And what does that imply? You know, that people aren't going to have to go to India. They don't have to go anywhere. They can just turn on their computer.
Is there something lost in that loss of a journey? You know, I mean, there's, I think it was Yupan said, you know, always remember the pleasure in the journey. And sometimes it's not just about the destination, but the journey as well. So, I mean, the difference in that, the web has just shrunk our world, you know, it's right at our fingertips. If you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I, like I said, I don't have any answers, but this is something I think about really a lot. Probably something is lost. And then, so how is that balanced out, you know, by what's gained? You know, maybe people don't have to practice. Like when I went to India, it was very much driven by my own personal pain, you know, so I could have recited forever, you know, I'm practicing for the sake of all beings, but it totally wasn't true. You know, I really didn't care about anybody else because I couldn't afford to. I mean, it just wasn't possible. It wasn't practical until a certain point, you know, when I had gone through some changes. But maybe now people can have that as a true motivation. We have a different sense of community different sense of self and other, because the world is so connected in mm-hmm. different ways. And so maybe people can, I think something is lost by not having that journey, but maybe something is gained by a different sense of who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really nice. It was interesting, actually. We also, we were talking about where this, this movement of meaning and purpose in people's lives, and really millennials, it being very important to them on, mm-hmm. on different levels, whether it's spiritual mm-hmm. or work-based mm-hmm. or whatever. And, are we going to be moving into a similar time that's kind of what's been going on with mindfulness, which is like purpose, purpose brought to you by, right. PG&E or Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, Nick Mindfulness, they call it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So I'd just love to hear your thoughts on, because I see the benefits to that as well, right? There's money flowing into that movement and pushing it, but does it get commercialized and lose some of its magic in some capacity?
Well, speaking about mindfulness, I think, and just making that analogy, I think inevitably, yes, but it's a big world, and within it, one does what one does, and you have your own sense of purpose and boundaries or intentionality, and you just do what you do, despite what. I mean, I am from the era when if I use the word mindfulness, nobody casually at a party, nobody would know what I was talking about. And I have a friend who's the mindfulness, the meditation coach for the Knicks, which is, I guess, a harsh thing to say. And I guess they haven't been doing that well. So I keep adding, he just got there,
Really?
And before that, he was working with the LA Lakers, and before that with the Chicago Bulls. So Phil Jackson brings him. Yeah, Phil Jackson just brings him wherever he goes. So apparently, which is great. So I said to him, do you use the word mindfulness? And he said, now I can. Mm. I didn't used to be able to use that at all. And I said, what did you used to say? Because obviously he was talking about the same thing, and he said, I used to talk about like getting above or getting below, like getting perspective on things, not being so stuck, not being so embroiled, so it's a different world.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me to see, I was signing books somewhere not too long ago at the end of some program, and one person came up to me to have a book signed, and she said, I'm a mindfulness coach. So I have no idea what that means, actually, but I said, that's great. And then the next person said, I'm starting a second career in mindfulness. And I said, oh, that's great. And then the third person said, I'm getting a degree in mindfulness. And I thought, it's just a different world.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. People for decades have been asking me what I think about that. And the truth is, history is happening regardless of what I think about it. It's just, it's true. It's happening. And I think it's terrific, mostly. And the parts that are not, I don't obsess over, it's just as part of what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the people, stockbrokers that are using mindfulness so they can get more wins on a day-to-day basis. That stuff's just endemic to the whole process of more awareness being around that and people being able to use it. And it's just like mm-hmm. yoga. People go to yoga and they want to get physically more active mm-hmm. and, get their bodies together. And then someone puts on a chant record by a guy named Krishnadas. And the next thing you know, oh my God, what's that? And they're at one of the, and their whole lives change.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no accounting for it. And the people that are going to be stuck in using it for completely the wrong reasons, McMindfulness, that was a great article. We did a podcast about that, by the way. That was really great. That's just the nature of stuff, It's just going to be that way as a result of who we are in this society and this culture. But yeah, I think it's all positive. It's like the net. I mean, there's things that are just distract the shit out of people and polarize them away from human contact. On the other hand, boy, look at the things that it can bring together, people's ability to meet on the net and share information that is just incredible. You know, I think I'd love to go back to the focus thing, this that we've been talking about, that you've been part of, this conference that you did a couple of days ago. And just I'll ask you a little bit about focus in our lives once we realize there is a path. And we're entering onto that path, and we're finding out all sorts of different methodologies and so on and so forth. And, you know, you talk a lot about this conference was a lot about focus, which can be used in business, focus.
Purpose.
That can be used in social action and so on. I think focus is really part of purpose.
Absolutely.
Too, for sure. But purpose is what I meant. Can you talk about purpose related to inner journey and what we need there and how it fits in with the Buddhist cosmology related to, we talked a little bit, I think it relates to one of the Eight Noble Paths, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, the concept of intention is extremely important in Buddhism, as is the concept of aspiration, although that isn't talked about so much. Intention is a really vital part of everything we do. And from the point of view of the Buddhist psychology, it's where the energy really is behind an action. It's like if I reached over and gave you this very interesting looking case. Is it for phone? What is that?
It's for our little
field recorder. Okay, so if I reached over and I gave you this case as a gift, all anybody sees is my hand moving down, picking up an object and moving it forward. But the question is why, you know, what's in my heart? Like, maybe I'm giving it to you because I like you and I want you to have it. Or maybe I'm giving it to you because I don't like you and I figure you'll never be able to open that up. You know, like same gesture, same smile, but it's coming from a totally different place. Or maybe I just gave a big lecture on generosity and I want everyone to think I'm a generous person or whatever. So the karmic seed, Buddhist teaching would say, is not in my arm. It's in the mind state that is impelling my arm to pick something up and move it forward. So the karmic seed is planted with the intention. And that's different than the West, where we tend to be a little disdainful, like the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So what do you mean you had a good intention? You totally screwed up. You know, it's a very different way of seeing it. So you're always kind of looking. Tibetan Buddhism, they call it spy consciousness. You just have a little part of your mind.
Spy consciousness.
Yeah. Whoa, just a little part of your mind looking, where am I coming from? And when I wrote Real Happiness at Work, I was trying to make it very concrete. So I said, before you go into a meeting or you have a big phone call, ask yourself, what do I want to see really come out of this? You know, do I want to be right or do I want a resolution? Do I want to be helpful? Do I want to destroy them? Whatever it is, because it's just one way of trying to tune into our intention. And that would be very important. You know, so when you talk about social action of trying to change the world, the intention is as important, maybe more important than even the action, you know, from the point of view of the Buddhist psychology. So that's part of purpose. And that's where you find integrity, actually, is in looking back at your intention and how skillfully you did something. I mean, obviously, I don't want to have a good motive in giving you this plastic case and throw it at you, you know, and knock you in the head. So we have skillfulness of action and so on. But that's where we look for integrity of what we've done. And aspiration is a somewhat different thing, although it's connected in that people think sometimes it's wrong to want anything on a spiritual path. And I think that that's unrealistic because why bother? You know, if you didn't think you were going to get something, it's easier not to, you know, not to bother finding the time and actually doing the thing. But we don't want that image of what we think is possible for us to be haunting us. Like, is it there yet? You know, how close am I? And so there's a lot of emphasis on just let go of that thought, that way of thinking. But we do have an aspiration. We should have a big aspiration, you know, instead. And that's holds true for life, too. Instead of thinking, I'm not capable of much or I'm going to do this, you know, to get a little bit of help, but you know, I can't really be free or have an integrated life or have intense compassion for myself and for others. It's just like, nah, you know, like not me. We need a big aspiration and some conviction that we can make that real.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. That relationship with purpose is, I think, highly important. And what I was thinking was that when we were talking about then carrying that purpose, once you have that sort of straightened out, your inner mm-hmm. purpose, and you've got a connection with it, then and only then can you actually try and activate that purpose in the realms of worldly stuff, be it even social Absolutely. Action and so on and so forth.
Well, yeah, that's the concept of the inner social action before outer right. social action.
Right. We talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of motivation, just talking about, there's a place where you got to have some awareness around that motivation, and you just mm-hmm. discussed that. And we talk about it in terms of the practices, a little bit different, the witness, so it's mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. really the same stuff, just a different word. And maybe it'd be good to talk about how you, because it seems to me the problem there is self-consciousness, witness, where you become too identified with the small ego self rather than witness coming from a heart-centered mm-hmm. place. Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with that?
Maybe that's why Tibetan Buddhists call it spy consciousness, yeah, you know, because uh-huh. it's yeah, not such a heavy...
Yeah.
thing. It's just like a little looking. Well, then I think it needs some real clarification about what witnessing means. It's like really trying to clarify what mindfulness means. It doesn't mean seeing something is cooking inside you and condemning it, you know, or hating it or fearing it or utterly believing it. You know, this is, I think, a bigger problem with mindfulness as it's taught than where it's being taught, you know. Mindfulness doesn't just mean you know what's going on, like you're hearing a sound or you're feeling the warmth of the coffee cup or something like that. Sorry, just knocked the table. But it means knowing in a certain way so that you're not judging and you're not condemning and you're not buying into something. You really are witnessing. And it's also not cold, you know, it's not like contemptuous or removed from the experience. And that's why some people will say, they'll talk about caring mindfulness or just trying to introduce the notion that it's not cold.
Mm. Mm.
And that's important. Kind of a corollary to that is that of the many benefits that mindfulness is said to bring, the one that's really being emphasized comes just from presence, which is great. You know, it's like if you drink your cup of coffee while you're checking your email, while you're on a conference call, while you have the TV on mute and you're reading the crawl, you don't tend to really like the coffee all that much. You know, it's just not that fulfilling an experience. And we so rarely look at the degree of our awareness as playing any role at all in our lack of fulfillment. We usually blame the coffee, right? It's like, I need to buy one of those other kinds of coffee makers, or it's the wrong ground or whatever. Maybe I have to go dark roast or, you know, so being present, just drinking the cup of coffee every now and then is a big level jump in our degree of fulfillment. And that's mostly how mindfulness is talked about. And I do think that's great. But classically, the main purpose of mindfulness is insight. It's understanding. It's not just having a better cup of coffee. You know, it's really understanding much more deeply things like change and impermanence and where happiness really is. You know, maybe it's not in holding on. Maybe it's not in revenge. Maybe it's not in separation. Let me take a look, you know, understanding how interconnected we all are, which we will see if we pay attention with mindfulness. And that's you know, still not as popularized as the other. Mm. You know, so you kind of have to, I think, search out that understanding a little bit.
I love the spy consciousness thing, though. I never heard that.
Yeah.
And
I imagine like a little periscope.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's okay. Don't get yourself too far. And that's what I meant by the witness. Don't get too get identified in, from the wrong place. Mm-hmm. And then where you have judgment and everything else going on and good and bad and all the polarities and so on. So you just a little bit, the little periscope comes up, just taking a look.
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing big. Yeah. Okay. There you are.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. That's great. I love that. I have to admit something here because it's come up as you're talking about multitasking and how we really get unmindful in this culture. And after the decades of work that I supposedly have been doing since meeting Maharaj Neem Karoli Baba all those years ago, last week, okay, my puppy decided to take off.
Do you have a new puppy?
Well, this is a year and a half. You haven't seen her yet.
Really? Yeah, you have a new one? Yeah, near three. One
that the wife decided she would save, rescue from some horror. So it didn't. She didn't come back in the timing that I thought she should. He always goes out. Anyway, I decided it was very bad, sleeting, God knows what, mucky weather. So I had to drive around to she goes to this horse farm next to us. I had to drive around, go up a winding road, right? A dirt road, which was muddy. And she wasn't there. So I decided, instead of going to the top somehow, I didn't want them to know I was on their road. I don't know what crap I had in my head. I started to back down, turning around. You know how you look out your rear window as you're mm-hmm. going down. And I'm coming down, and it was windy. Suddenly, I get a phone call.
Oh.
And I took it.
Oh.
It's from our good friend Ramesh.
Mm.
I had some business with him, and I took it. And I'm talking to him, driving down the okay? And I slid in some mud. I went too close to the edge. I said, Ramesh, I don't think I can talk to you anymore. Hang up. And went off into a rut. I get out of the car. I have one other dog with me. I get out of the car, and it's overhanging a cliff, okay? It wasn't only about maybe 15 feet. It was going to go into a little stream. And it was only being held up by some branches, okay? I could barely get out of the car, and I can't tell you the recrimination that I've had about you could actually took that call and decided you were going to, I mean, I'm a big multitasker, and I'm, you know, I spy consciousness. I need some spy consciousness because basically the witness there was all about you, stupid mother.
Well, $3,000
later, when they had to haul me out.
Oh, God.
The tree just crushed the front, the side of the car, okay? Fortunately, I have good insurance.
Oy.
Go Allstate. What they say on TV is true. They take care of you.
This is an ad. Maybe we could,
yes,
this,
it's an ad for Allstate.
Is brought to you by Allstate.
Yes. And maybe maybe there'll be a sponsor.
I want to see puppy
we'll be a new
pictures.
Sponsor. For, yeah.
I want to see pictures. Yeah. I had a great moment of mindfulness staying in your house where I was like zoning out, petting. You had, at the time, you had like four dogs or something like that, three or four dogs.
Yeah.
And I was just like absolutely petting a dog head. And then I looked down, it was a totally new dog. And yeah. I just said like, who are you? And it was like the neighbor's dog. Yeah. And I was just like,
yeah. Oh, that's
so right. You really have like six dogs.
Yeah, the neighbor's dog comes over too. Yeah, the big one, yeah. So yeah, spy consciousness. I'm loving that concept.
Well, it's interesting. When I think my first introduction to that, I mean, I came up without any kind of mindfulness I wasn't really curious about meditation. I was a jock, mm-hmm. you know, like everything was playing soccer, lacrosse, that kind of thing. And someone handed me Way of the Peaceful Warrior at one mm-hmm. point, you know, and that was kind of my entrance to what I think you're talking about, spy consciousness. But for me, it was, you know, learning about just, like you said, being in the moment and enjoying taking that bite of your food and chewing it 30 times and really being there with it and enjoying that. And like, and I started doing that, and you really start to, you know, kind of suck out the nectar, the essence of life. When you, you know, do that, everything becomes this like ecstatic experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could be crossing the street, you can just look at somebody and have a cup of coffee. And I mean, you know, you have those moments where you think about that in a big way, and maybe, and maybe that's what you're talking about, or at least that's how I'm hearing it, is those are moments of spy consciousness, mm-hmm, where mm-hmm. you have that awareness and that intention. And then of course your crazy life comes in, you get pulled away, you know, and then you, you know, come back in. It actually reminds me of something that you said, to help me get into meditation. At one point I was watching you speak at the retreat out in Maui, and you were talking about how long you've been meditating for, and you know, people get frustrated with themselves because they're sitting there, they're mm-hmm. you know, entering the darkness or whatever, you know, it is, and then they're off on some tangent and they judge themselves and they're like, oh my gosh, and they bring themselves back, and then, you know, I'll never do that again, and then 5 seconds later you're off on some yeah. other tangent. I remember you yeah. talking about that,
yeah,
and it's just, I mean, that's life, right? That's just, but it's,
that is,
it's
life,
widening those gaps, I guess, when you come
yeah.
back,
yeah. Yeah, and it's coming back more gracefully and with a better sense of humor and more love for yourself. And I was just teaching last night in Brooklyn, and somebody sitting like in the back of the room asked me some question, and I said, oh, you know, I remember teaching in this very room, and somebody sitting right where you're sitting now objected to something I was saying. And because what I was saying was that in meditation practice, say your practice is something like feeling your breath, you know, being aware of the sensations of your breath. For most people, it's not going to be 800 breaths before your mind wanders. It's going to be like one, you know, or two, and then you're somewhere else. And then comes the magic moment when you realize, oh, it's been some time since I last felt a breath. So what happens next is actually considered the really significant thing in practice, where we let go gently. And with some kindness toward ourselves, we start over. And then maybe 10 seconds later, you have to let go and begin again, and let go and begin again. And what I had said the first night that I was talking about it there was that's like a life skill. You know, even if you never get to 700 breaths, doesn't matter, because what you're really practicing is the ability to let go more gracefully and to start over with like a better energy, you know, and not so much self-contempt and so on. And I said, and then we bring that right into work. We bring that right into life. Maybe you make a mistake and you have to start over, because I think everything in life, you know, now that I'm not 18 anymore, I would say nothing in life is a straight shot. You know, you're always starting over. It's like you fall down and you have to get up, or let someone help you up, or you make a mistake, you have to kind of recalibrate, and you lose sight of your aspiration, you have to begin again. I said, everything is like, it's almost like the rhythm of life. And so that's an important skill. So a couple of years ago, or last year, I guess, because it was after Real Happiness at Work came out, I said that, and this guy sitting in this room said, I don't believe that. Mm. You know, he said, I think that's just laziness. Like, if I make a mistake and I forgive myself, that's just an excuse to be able to say, yeah, so what? I'll make another mistake in 2 minutes. Doesn't matter. I'll forgive myself again. It's just laziness. You know, the only way to really get something done is kind of. And I said, I don't think so, actually, because if you do the thought experiment and put yourself in the place where you kind of blow it in some fashion, and you spend the next 15 months just like on yourself about it, it's exhausting. You don't have the energy or the clarity to kind of make amends or pick up or do something differently. It's actually not helpful. It's not how we get something done. So it was just very funny because this woman was sitting in exactly the same space in the same room,
yeah,
you know, so it was eerie, actually.
Kindness, that's an important word, because I think that's probably one of the most difficult things that we that we all deal with, is being kind to ourselves. It's, why is that so difficult? And you know, what are we talking about when, I mean, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, kindness is my only religion. Mm-hmm. He says things like that. And we are so unkind to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it plays out to our whole, our lives in a way that is so multifaceted and basically destructive, really. Can you talk about that? Kindness.
Well, I've often thought in this culture, kindness can be presented as a kind of secondary virtue. It's like if you can't be brilliant, you can't be courageous, you can't be wonderful. It's like, okay, be kind. You know, it's nice. It's good. It's not great, but it's good. But I think in truth, of course, it is great. It has greatness in it. And we don't look back at the people who've been kind to us and think, oh, poor fool, you know, like they were so weak. You know, we're quite grateful, actually. And it feels like a power to be kind. And it's said in the Buddhist teaching that the best kind of generosity comes from a sense of inner abundance. You know, we might, going back to motivation, we might give somebody a gift because we feel obliged or because everyone's watching or because we've taken a vow, you know, but the best kind of generosity comes from a sense of inner abundance. So you don't feel like you're going to be depleted or you've lost something or, you know, you're deprived. And we know that people's generosity is not determined by the objective extent of how much they have, you know, because you could have a whole huge amount, but not at all have the internal feeling you have enough. Yeah. And it's very, very hard to give. So kindness is like the same way. It implies a kind of inner sufficiency or abundance when it's really done the best way. You know, it's not like at a remove or with some kind of condescension or something like that. It's really just, it's something flowing out because we have enough within.
Mm. Well, that's a big statement. We have enough. Yeah. Okay. That, you know, that's a lot of our problems out there is that we're not enough. We don't have enough. And for me, it goes back to what you talk about all the time, practice. Mm-hmm. That therein lies practice makes perfect, so that we can connect inside ourselves where we can find that abundance and generosity and mm-hmm. so on.
Practice, practice, practice.
Yeah.
No, it's really, it's beautiful. I mean, there's just nothing that feels better, really, than kindness and gratitude, you know? So, it's abundant and it does come from within. It's a beautiful thing because, you know, we in this country, you're kind of sold this from a young age, pursuit of happiness, you know, and that word pursuit is, it really puts you on this constant search outwards, you know, and looking for external sources mm-hmm. of happiness, which creates quite a difficult journey. You know, and I think if you take that pursuit out, it's just happiness. It comes back to kindness for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It really does.
Yeah, it's a tremendously happy state.
It really is.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's got such a bad rap, like it's depriving yourself of something, or
what you've said about love. Actually, I remember you said when we did that cultivating loving awareness retreat. And you said, yeah, no, being loving isn't mean being weak.
I know.
We all have, yeah, there's that relationship.
What did you say our next retreat, the one I'm coming to, is called?
We don't know yet.
Oh, we don't know yet.
No, I'm going to be talking to you. Well, since it's down the line, by the way, people out there, Sharon will be working at a retreat, teaching at a retreat with Krishna Das and Ram Das in December. The first Wednesday in December, I think it's, I can't remember, like the second or third or something. But go to ramdas.org and you will see the particulars about that. So do come to that. No, I'm going to get with you to find out what it is that we did decide that because Sharon is working on a book about love. And we just talked about that. And we are working on a book that's actually going to come out from the Love, Serve, Remember Foundation in November called Love Everyone, which is our journeys to India after meeting up with Ram Das. What happened? How overland? A lot of that, there's some fun stories about that, the overland journey that you mentioned before and how we met Neem Karoli Baba and how our lives were changed and so on and so forth. So that
I'm
book
so
is coming,
coming yeah. out in November.
So that's coming out in November. So Love Everyone. I mean, that's my, I haven't talked to anybody about it except you, but I think that would be a lovely I think Ram Dass would appreciate it.
All right. So. Love everyone. Well, you know what? I also had...
That's our instructions, everybody. Yeah. So
love everyone.
From Maharaji, love everyone.
It's fabulous. Yeah. Love everyone.
And tell the truth. Love, serve, and remember. But also there's that little thing, tell the truth, that he said. And that's when Ram Dass said, the truth is I can't love everyone.
Well, as a total aside, I want to ask you a question, or both of you, you know, or make some comment. I got the chance not to read that whole manuscript, but to just look at a little bit of it when I was staying at our friend's house in Montreal. And one of the things that struck me was that whole journey, you know, for so many people, both the kind of wake-up call, like something else is possible and there's a different way to live, happened because of radio. Like, you had a radio show, right? And you put Ram Dass on it. And then people, like younger people growing up in Montreal, heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And like Anasuya, you know, or other people. And it was like, wow. You know, so I was starting to think about the radical medium of radio in those days and how it made something possible that maybe had been more held by other people.
Well, here in
So what about now?
Well, New York then, it was WBAI, right? Mm-hmm. And Ram Dass was on there and answering questions and so on and so forth. It was an amazing medium then that did enlarge the audience in terms of, yes, many of those people ended up in India, from Montreal to New York to San Francisco to Chicago. And now it's the net. I mean, what's happened since the ease at which, well, for Ram Dass in particular, if we're talking about him, the fact that he can no longer travel because of his stroke and is in Maui, as you know, and we do these retreats there, and then we take these retreats and they have certain subject matter, and we put little films together and we get those, and those go out to the world. The fact, what's happening on the net is the grace of the internet versus the polarization of people not being able to relate with each other because they're strictly on, you know, on text, and that's about it, you know. So that is really what's happening. Of course, now podcasts, right? That's why I got you to do this stuff, Sharon, because the kind of sharing that happens through this particular medium, for me, it's full circle from those days in the early, late 60s, early 70s when I was doing the radio thing. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing that way. And it's graceful. It really is. It allows people to really share. I mean, you're a perfect example of this. I mean, you came, Jared came to me because he was in the music business and I was in the music business, and he had just gotten out of it. And I wanted somebody to help get this audience, his peeps, the millennial generation, because Ram Dass wanted to make this available to a new generation, all of this information, these teachings, of decades of teaching. And Jared had the motivation to do that. He wanted to do it for himself, and then he wanted to accomplish the mission of getting it out there, which I think is a highly developed thing in your generation, of wanting to take actions to change. Whereas with us, it was like Sharon said, we were terribly unhappy and disturbed young people and didn't know what to do with it. And so we were led to India, which is at this point not necessary because of the, really as a large part, because of the net and everything is available to you. But just talk about your own motivation back when I, you know, first met you, and how that was important. And talk about purpose, if we get back to that.
No, I mean, well, something that you hit on first, that, I mean, that's really interesting. The podcasts are really the Wild West, you know, I mean, of the internet right now, you know, and it's not even, the net is one thing. It used to be, you know, I'm online this many times a day. Now it's, you're online constantly because you have your phone in your pocket. So most people, you know, this podcast comes right through to their phone. They've got it, you know, they subscribe to it. So when the new podcast comes up, they've automatically got it. They can listen to it anywhere in the world. Then there's these, you know, apps as well off of that, you know, you can learn to do meditation. You've got, you know, guided meditations for 3 minutes a day or a minute, or it can have music, no music. It can tell you, you know, I've got staff at my office. I mean, I run an ad agency for purpose-driven clients. And a lot of my staff, we've gotten into a daily kind of routine of breathing and meditation in the morning. But then throughout the day, I hear these alarms going off and people are literally reminding themselves to get off their computer for even 1 minute and put it down. You know, we're working with this one client that's fascinating, called Digital Detox. I mean, everyone knows the words digital detox, but this is like the leader organization. This guy, Levi Felix, who's just a genius kind of spokesman for our generation, who is saying, you know, technology, computers, phones, they're not going away. They're going to be part of our lives. Let's just learn to have a healthy relationship with them and social media. So, you know, the people are talking about having an actual anxiety that exists now when in checking your phone. That if you don't check your phone every once in a while, you're getting anxiety. Go ahead.
It's a phobia.
It's a phobia, yeah.
Yeah, we went through, and there's a whole thing about DNA. You get passed on phobias through your DNA. How about that? Okay. And one of them is checking your phone. If you didn't have that phone there, people go nuts when suddenly their phone.
That phone's all the way through the room. Yeah.
You're looking at your phone. I see you're looking at your phone.
I just got a new iPhone. It's like I barely know how to use it. Yeah. I just got it. You know, yeah, it was right. Like.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so, call it FOMO is what they're calling it. Fear of missing out. FOMO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I quote in my book, Real Happiness, I think I quote this woman, Linda Stone, who called it continuous partial attention. And she said she placed that as fear of missing out. You know, like we're online, we're doing email, and then we think, what about Facebook? And then we do that for a couple of minutes. What about Twitter? You know, we just are so afraid of missing anything that we're constantly jumping.
Absolutely. And you know, and to get back to what else that you guys were diving into on kind of this generation waking up, and you know, there's a real people want to act. You know, it's like the need for a call to action. So this mindfulness work and finding a purpose can really wake you up. You know, we're talking about the inner social action. Then people want to express that in an outwards capacity, and the ability to do that now with how small the world's been made through organizations like Kiva or others, where you literally can, you know, be investing in a tiny business over in India with some, you know, lady who needs an extra sewing loom, and then she can triple her capacity. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's unbelievable, you know, your ability to impact. So, and what you're asking about purpose in particular, and I'll just throw out the plug because I thought it was amazing. This nonprofit, Echoing Green, big nonprofit that's where like Teach for America started and a lot of other amazing organizations have come out of it, held this conference this weekend called Purpose 360, where they invited all these leaders in the field of purpose, whether it's in faith and spirituality or academics, people researching the field of purpose. Like, what is that even? And so, you know, we had to work from some common definition for purpose. And a lot of it's what Sharon was talking about earlier. You know, one was a part of that definition is true to yourself. Another part of that definition was helping the world in some way, you know, applying yourself to the greater good. And one piece that we actually found was kind of missing in the definition was that loving intention. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have the loving intention, then ISIS is a purposeful organization. Yeah, that's right. You know, they've got purpose, right. Yeah, but they don't have that loving intention, that kindness. So I think that, you know, that starts to round it out for me. And that's where you're seeing this, you know, millennial generation, like there's a real hunger for it.
I mean, we've been really fortunate, and I've been fortunate in terms of meeting you and others like you who have this sincere motivation to really become a change, and become a change in yourself, in ourselves, and then become a change in the world. And I think that is that's special. And I often, with my friend and partner David Silver in Mind Rolling, we talk a lot about the similarity that we went through when we came up in the late 60s and early 70s, and the transformations that happened and the stressors that were happening then are very similar. In wars and polarization, cultural polarization, rich and poor, and all of it are very similar and highlighted today. I mean, today is a very tough world to live in, which I think is part of this real motivation on behalf of millennials to really do something about this. But the fact that they seem way more able to actually get into the constructs that are necessary to actually be the change that they're looking to be, whereas we were not quite there, and I mentioned that before. I don't feel that we were quite there in the late 60s and early 70s. It was the tremendous unhappiness because we've been brought up in this cold, absolutely non-spiritual, quote-unquote. We were running from our religions and so on. I feel really great promise and looking to the future when things really do have to change here or there will be some real issues. So God bless you, boy.
It's
33.
What's really happening, what I'm starting to see in the corporate world that's interesting is as people are doing this work and waking up to it, it's corporations and brands are forced to become more conscious and more purposeful. You hear about this shift from just a bottom line business to a triple bottom line business, you know, caring about people and planet as well. And I think it even goes to this quadruple bottom line, which is like purpose, you know, meaning, spirituality, that businesses are forced to kind of offer both their employees and other stakeholders like their consumers. You know, so this the drive of this new generation to be better, you know, people want to be better. They're starting to take the time to figure out how to be better and how to act on that. It's forcing businesses to be better. And whenever you want to see, you know, who's controlling, let's say, society at large in any time in history, it's whoever's got the tallest buildings. At one point, it was the kingdoms. At another point, it was the churches. Right now, it's the corporations. And, you know, we're here in New York City. You look around, you know, there. And so if you can drive meaning and purpose into those tall buildings and that gets shouted from the rooftops, we're going to be on a, you know, going towards a better place, I think. I do think it is a bit of a powder keg right now. And that is certainly part of the, you know, the brew, if you will, that's kind of like stirring up. And in a good way, I think gonna push all of us to continue to be better.
Yes. And if you take Sharon's meditation challenge as one of the first actions that you do.
Absolutely.
That's what we talk about. It all goes back to practice. It really does.
People need a challenge too. And social media, I mean, use it for good, you know, and it's being used for good. You look at that ice bucket challenge, you know, that happened over the last year for ALS. Unbelievable. They raised over $115 million off of that ice bucket challenge. And it's challenging someone to put ice on themselves. And if they don't want to do it, they donate to the organization. Most of the people who dump the ice still donate anyways. And it just generated, you know, massive awareness. But
I know, like, as I saw people that I knew doing it, I thought, oh no, you know,
don't challenge me.
Don't challenge me. You know, like, I spent a lot of years in India taking cold showers. That never came to me.
Well, we're kind of at the end here. But can we ask you, since, you know, it's a terrible, rainy, sleety ice fest outside here that we're going to go into together. Can we just take us through a little couple of minutes sit here?
Sure.
That would be great.
Well, since we're in New York City, as we sit comfortably, I guess the first thing would be to just listen to sound. Since there is some, there's a sound of my voice. For us, there's the sound of the traffic. And bring your attention to the feeling of your body sitting, whatever sensations you discover. Bring your attention to your hands. This is an interesting exercise, like make the shift from the more conceptual level, like go fingers, to the world of direct sensation, picking up pulsing, throbbing, pressure, whatever it might be. You don't have to name these things, but feel them. And then bring your attention to the feeling of your breath. Just the normal, natural breath. Wherever you feel it most strongly. This is our home. This is where we rest our attention. This is what will go with us to work, to school. Wherever we go, let me just rest. If you find your attention wandering, you get lost in thought, or you fall asleep, it's fine. We say the most important moment is the next moment, when you realize you've been gone. Gently let go and start over. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. And by the way, just another little announcement, something you don't know about, that there's a lovely new film with you and Ram Dass and me moderating called Compassion, Truth, and Adversity from the Compassion and Adversity retreat that we did last...
Oh, in the spring.
Yeah, in the spring. We finally put together
a nice
session, and it's really lovely. And everybody, that will be available 1 week from tomorrow, which today is the 2nd, 3rd. So on February 10th, hopefully this... It'll be available after the 10th as well. It's just being released on the 10th and be available to stream, so you can take part in that. It's a wonderful... wonderful program with Sharon and Ram Dass. Thank you. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Sharon Salzberg, Meta Hour Podcast. And we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Sharon Salzberg Meta Hour. We really do appreciate your support and hope you will continue that support by going to mindpodnetwork.com/Sharon and clicking on the donate button, or by using our amazon.com portal for all of your purchases. Namaste.